The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. Jill, an NHS midwife, is asking the questions in this episode.
My name's Jill. I've been a midwife and nurse in the NHS for almost 40 years. In this episode of the Beat Podcast, I'm joined remotely, of course, by Professor Glenn Gibson. Glenn is Professor of Food Microbiology at the University of Reading, and his research focuses on the gut microbiome, its profound implications for health and disease, and how it can be influenced by diet. Today, we're going to discuss what the gut microbiome is, why it's important in early and later life, and how our roles are important as clinicians when caring for babies and young children. Glenn, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, and pleased to have the opportunity to chat with you, Jill.
So, Glenn, the question we really need to start with today is, what is the gut microbiome?
So microbiome is something which is thought to be quite a recent term, but actually studies show that the term was coined well over 20 years ago, and it's a reference to a collection of microorganisms as well as their genetic material. So it's an ecosystem which is full of microbes in the gut of humans. This typically is bacteria, although viruses, parasites and yeasts also occur. And in humans, it doesn't matter whether we're infants or babies or teenagers or adults, the gut microbiome is the most heavily colonized microbiome associated with our bodies. And mainly these bugs are in the large intestine, which is at the end of the gastrointestinal tract.
Okay, so my understanding is that the gut microbiome develops in early life. How does it develop then?
Well, we become inoculated. That means we acquire our gut microbiome principally at birth. And it doesn't really matter if we're born through the vaginal or cesarean route of delivery. We acquire microorganisms during that process. So up until the point of birth, we're pretty sterile. And while we're being born, we acquire mainly from mum our microbiome. And what these big collection of microbes find in the gut of the infant is a sterile environment, which is very easy for them to colonize. And mainly the bugs are actually transferred from mum. And so, you know, the first present we ever got in our lives, if you like, comes from our mothers, and it's the gift of microorganisms. And it's not great to aesthetically think about that, but it's probably one of the most important presents we will ever get. And then the bacteria, as I said, they find this very favourable environment for their growth, and they grow up to pretty vast numbers, and we are stuck with them, for want of a better word, for the rest of our lives. So it's during birth, Jill, they have a big dependency on the type of diet that we have, and then they help stimulate our digestive processes and immune function throughout the rest of our lives. So pretty crucial to really get the interaction between the microbiome and the host right.
So that means then that the microbiome actually begins to develop at birth?
We get colonized at birth, and then the development largely occurs on feeding, and that is the case for the rest of our lives. There are many factors which can influence the composition of the microbiome, but diet is the one which really, I think, overrides the others.
So tell us, Glenn, what purpose does the microbiome serve?
A crucially important purpose, because there's just so many microbes in the human gut. They're all alive, they're all active, they get fed well, as you know, we eat food, so we also are feeding our microorganisms, and they play a crucial role in trying to help us resist infections. They help us to digest our foods, and they stimulate our immune function, and that can happen in a positive manner, such that things like inflammatory conditions, including eczema and asthma, they can be mitigated by having an appropriate collection of microorganisms. And actually, oddly enough, it's now accepted, I think, that the large intestine is the most active organ in the entire human body. And this is because of the huge collection of microorganisms that are in there and the activity that they can afford. So, you know, it's easy to think that the heart is active, the kidney, the lung, the brain, muscle tissues, but actually the gut is probably outstrips all of them put together.
So it seems that the microbiome has a really key role to play in the immune system.
Definitely. And what goes on, Jill, is that the microbes can be split into categories, very general or generic categories. Some of them are a negative for health. And of course, we do see that certain gut diseases can be caused by components of the microbiome. And then we have the majority, which are actually quite neutral. And then we have another proportion which are positive for health. And what we'd like to do, of course, is to make sure that the ones which are beneficial for health are more readily stimulated. And that happens at the expense of certainly the ones which are detrimental and to a lesser extent neutral. So the immune system, it's estimated that something like 70% of our immune system arises in the gut. And that is mainly because of the microorganisms. Now, bacteria are very antigenic, so they're very efficient at stimulating the immune system. And as I've mentioned, that can come from either negative or positive or neutral components of the microbiota. So it's key really to ensure that the positive components are very much fortified, and that can then play an overall role in our host health.
So given how important the microbiome is in terms of our immunity, how can we as clinicians support the development of a healthy gut microbiome in the newborn?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we can change our microbiome, we can change its composition, and we can change its function. And that means that, you know, in a nutshell, we can change our health status because of this. So, for instance, if you have or someone has a genetically linked disease, you can't do anything about that because you can't change your genes. But you can change your gut microbiome, and that does occur through diet. So I think we've begun to unravel in the last few years the crucial role that the gut microbiome can play in health, and happily this can be modified such that health status is more optimized, and we can begin to see effects such as reduction of infection rates. That can include gut infection rates as well as systemic, including respiratory issues, and the overall role that the immune system plays in trying to boost our resistance or our ability to ward off infections is absolutely crucial, and kernel or central to that is the gut microbiome. So the mode of birth influences the composition of the microbiome throughout our lives. If we take antibiotics, they tend to have a fairly negative effect on the microbiome. So what we really need is to ensure that these and other issues like stress, levels of exercise, which all change the microbiome, do so in a more positive manner. And so we're at the stage now where we're beginning to unravel which dietary components can influence the microbiome in a very positive manner. And these are being taken on board, you know, by the research community, and hopefully put into practice ultimately by clinicians who are really the front line of all of this. For instance, breastfeeding is very important because human breast milk contains ingredients called prebiotics. One of the main fractions of breast milk is its prebiotic fraction. And I won't bore you with the awful names, but there are things like glycoproteins and other carbohydrate type molecules in breast milk which have a very stimulatory effect upon the positive components of the microbiota. And the target bugs for these are groups called bifidobacteria and lactobacilli. These are safe microorganisms. They're known to inhibit pathogens, so the bugs which do negative effects. They're known to decrease our inflammatory status. And so it's very important that dietary components like prebiotics are used to fortify a more health beneficial microbiome. And as I mentioned, you know, we're in the age now where this is feasible and is being put into practice.
Glenn, I'm just going to take us back to a point that you made there about the importance of the development of the microbiome in early life. And in terms of probably some of our listeners who are clinicians in the front line, so how much does that mode of birth influence
The idea is with the vaginal delivery, you get I don't know whether this is the right word, but a fuller transfer or a more complete transfer of microorganisms compared to the cesarean, which is more limited in terms of the microbes which can potentially be transferred to the infant. That's not to say that there's any difficulties in acquiring the microorganisms from cesarean versus the vaginal route, but the type of feeding which happens, in particular breastfeeding, it doesn't matter if we are cesarean or whether we are vaginal delivered, the type of influences that breast milk has because of its prebiotic effect can fortify beneficial bugs in both scenarios. So there are differences in the microbes which are acquired depending on delivery process, but these can be kind of unraveled by the type of feeding which occurs afterwards. And we do know that nutrition has a big role to play in the gut microbiome composition throughout our lives, when we are first born right through until more elderly years.
So, Glenn, you've made reference a couple of times to prebiotics. Can you tell us a little bit more about prebiotics? What are they and why are they so important?
Sure, yes. So prebiotics are fertilizers or substrates or foods for beneficial bugs. So if we've got this collection called the microbiome, a prebiotic would selectively pick out the ones which are of positive value and not the others. It's similar to probiotics, which is a more familiar term. So probiotics are the use of live microorganisms themselves, which are supposed to be of benefit. A prebiotic fortifies or stimulates the ones which are already present in the microbiome. So one of the best analogies I heard recently was that of a garden, if you want, where in the garden you've got a mixture of roses and weeds, and obviously you want to increase the number of roses that are there. So a probiotic would be a case of actually planting more roses, whereas a prebiotic would be using a fertilizer which stimulates the roses already in the garden and decreases the weeds. So in the gut microbiome, what we want to do or see with a prebiotic are ingredients which stimulate the beneficial bugs already in the gut microbiome at the expense of the others. And breast milk does this. And there are other food ingredients. I won't give you the full name, but they're called FOS and GOS, which also do this. And the reason is because of their structure. So their structure is very favourable to metabolism by the health-promoting, the health-positive bacteria. And examples of those are groups called bifidobacteria and lactobacilli.
Okay, thank you. So we know that some babies will need to be born by a cesarean section, and indeed for some babies that is a life-saving procedure. So is there anything more that we can do as clinicians when we're present with mother and baby just born to promote microbiome development? What are the key things that we should be mindful of?
Well, I think you know, hospitals are very clean, sterile, relatively sterile environments nowadays. And people argue that, you know, the hygiene hypothesis, as it were, where, you know, you acquire a little bit of immunity because of bugs which are picked up is actually quite a good thing. But you kind of don't want to go too far with that. So I don't mind really whether we talk about cesarean or vaginal route, but the use of ingredients like prebiotics to fortify the beneficial gut flora community, I think, is absolutely crucial. And that is the case in our early days. Because, you know, seeding the immune response, seeding our ability to deal with infections is critical at that stage. But it also counts for our childhood years through our adult years and into more elderly life. And in on the latter of those, there is a recognition that beneficial microorganisms do deplete, become decreased with age. And this potentially explains why, for instance, when there's an outbreak of gastroenteritis or infections, they tend to be more detrimental as we get older than in younger people. So there's a lot of interest in that age group, as there is, of course, in the infant situation, which we're talking about today.
We've emphasised the importance of breastfeeding, but beyond breastfeeding, when a baby is weaning, what role does nutrition play at that point?
again, a very, very important role, Jill. Breastfeeding, the classical, if you want, or gold standard type of microbiome is thought to be that of a breastfed infant. And this is, again, because of the high levels of prebiotics and their ability to stimulate beneficial groups of bacteria in the gut. But in later years, again, in moving through weaning into more adult type diets, maybe when children go to school, there are foods out there which do contain prebiotics. They occur naturally in lots of fruit and veg. And, you know, for years and years, we've understood that fruit and veg are very good for overall health. And that does count for gut health as well. Antioxidants, polyphenols present in fruit and veg also make a contribution. So some of the foods which are high in prebiotic contents include bananas, onions, asparagus, artichoke, garlic, actually, and leek. Maybe children at weaning are not that keen on these foods. So I wonder whether generally the advocation of kind of fiber type diets, because at the end of it, prebiotics do behave like fibers. They have a selective fermentation in the gut towards the goodies, for want of a better word. But generally, in terms of gut health and nutrition, it tends to be high fiber, high fermentable carbohydrate. That's not absorbed carbohydrate like sugars or sucrose, but fermentable carbohydrate tend to be positive for gut health. And this encompasses, again, the whole sort of concept of what prebiotics do, in that they are not absorbed, so they don't have a calorific impact. They get down into the large intestine and have this very tailored or selective effect towards the beneficial bugs which are already in there. And this is really what breastfeeding helps to achieve.
Thank you. So we have developed an understanding, Glenn, about the importance of everything we can do as clinicians in the early development of the gut microbiome. I wonder if you can tell us sort of broadly, what are the longer term benefits of a healthy gut microbiome going into adulthood?
Yes, I mean, it's amazing what's going on at the moment. I mean, I've worked in this field for longer than I like to admit. It's probably over 30 years now, unfortunately. And I never thought that when I started working in this area, that would be where we are today, that the gut microbiome is seen to be so critical for overall health. So we've kind of known for a long time that it's about its ability to influence the immune response, its ability to reduce infection rates, and then the whole atopic eczema and asthma field begun to move forward. But in the last few years, it's been amazing to see the link now between the gut and the brain, and how nutritional profiles can help cognitive function or mental capacity. And I think the next few years is going to be amazing in unraveling the potential link between the gut microbiome and systemic, that means outside the gut, systemic influences on health, including mental capacity. The whole area of anxiety, depression is being looked at. Some of our own research at my university, we've looked at autistic spectrum disorders and some of the gut issues that autistic kids have. The other big area which is going on is the whole influence of metabolic syndrome, which is related to obesity, and how the gut microbiome may be able to affect appetite, may be able to regulate the feelings of fullness or satiety. So there are some big, crucial health issues which are being looked at. And kind of coming back to what we talked about at the start, the good news in all of this is that our microbiome can be altered. We can change our diet, which then changes our microbiome. And if we then begin to correlate towards these important conditions, ranging from infections to inflammatory reactions, right through to metabolic issues like obesity and cognitive function, I think there's a massive agenda there for us to get to grips with. But all of it is realistic, and I think we are at the stage where we can begin to understand which foods can help in this capacity.
Thank you, Glenn. Absolutely fascinating. So we've covered a lot in 20 minutes, and thank you for giving us that really helpful summary about the importance of promoting good gut microbiome in infants from the very earliest phases, and then going on to talk about the implications of this in later life in many realms of our health. both physical and in mental health. We've covered a lot in just 20 minutes, and of course there's far more to say about this, so we'll have to save that for another time. But thank you for joining us, Glenn. Thank you, and hopefully this has given listeners a real insight into what the gut microbiome is and how we can best support babies' gut microbiome development to give babies the best start in life. Thank you.
No, not at all, Jill. My pleasure, and I hope it was a little bit informative. This is a critical area for nutrition and microbiological research, and I think the more we learn, the more we understand. So good times ahead, hopefully.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. We'll be right back.